Hello and welcome to the Oldie News Round with Giles and Mary. Giles Wood, the distinguished artist and Oldie columnist, and Mary Killen, the Oldie contributor and Dear Mary in The Spectator. And we're beginning this week with a sad death. Richard Rogers, the architect of the Millennium Dome, the Lloyds Building and the Pompidou Centre, has died aged 88. And on the back of his death, I don't mean to be rude about him, but do both of you like any modern buildings? And is there any virtue in making buildings look pragmatic rather than beautiful? The thing about Lloyds and the Pompidou Centre was they made a virtue of showing off all their pipes on the outside of the building rather than conceal them. Mary, where do you stand on modern architecture?
I'm afraid that I prefer the past to the present. And I did it probably for psychological reasons and for reasons of things working better when the proportions were correct. And, you know, there's some terrible buildings in Ireland. I don't know if you've been over there, Harry. They're worse than the modern ones in England. I'm talking about public buildings. Well, there are one or two I don't mind. They tend to be repro. So I'm not the person to ask. Giles has better visual judgment than I do.
Well, of course, we associate Richard Rogers with the Millennium Dome, which was the world's worst PR disaster when they tried to get into it. Do you remember?
I remember that, yes.
But we can't blame Richard Rogers for that. But it's not a building that I'd like to visit. Neither do I like the Pompidou Centre. But we do have something in common that we both... Richard Rogers and I have a loathing of the walkie-talkie building, and apparently that was one of his pet hates. It's called Fenchurch House or Mansions or something. It's the walkie-talkie building. I hope that an incoming near-Earth object is going to take it out very soon without any loss of life.
Which building is that, though?
The walkie-talkie, Mary.
Do you know it, Harry?
In the city, yes. I once had to write an article about it because it was so badly designed that it reflected the sun's rays down onto the street and melted cars. And I literally cooked an egg on the bonnet of a car.
The thing is, I'm afraid to say that your voice is cutting out and your face is freezing.
But it may be recording all right. It may maybe just a sort of tempo rubato. In other words, you're speeding up and slowing down and going...
Well, I'll keep my contributions to a minimum. But Giles, you paint very beautiful pictures. Do you think there is a slight worship of ugliness in modern art?
I think increasingly skyscrapers are starting to look more and more old hat. And modernism is looking old hat. When you start to look at the Bosco Verticale, which is a high-rise development in Milan, which is covered in shrubs and trees. And this is a vertical forest. It's a prototype building for a new form of relationship between humans and other living species. And that seems to be that nature should be at the heart of architecture now, as we are entering the coming century of the environment. And abroad is, as you would expect, way ahead of the game. Singapore, Milan, these are the places we should be looking at now for inspiration. So putting nature back at the heart of architecture.
And also...
And so we're getting texture back into our lives rather than monoculture.
Yeah, and monologues.
Oh, right. Okay.
As you referred to, Mary, an understanding of the past. So Giles, you've said before at art school, you were the only one who wanted to paint pictures with their historical knowledge to them. It strikes me that it's the same with modern architects. If you don't know the past, you don't dare try to recreate it.
I think that's true, yes.
It's about the hotel rooms, Nutty.
You shouldn't throw away the rule book until you know the rules. And another thing about Richard Rogers, Nutty, is that I think he was left wing. But he was very relaxed about getting involved in a luxury flat development in Knightsbridge called One Hyde Park.
Absolutely hideous, those ones.
Absolutely terrible building. but is obviously intensely relaxed about having to go sup with the devil.
I wish that you were slightly less relaxed about creating edifices.
Yes.
Yourself.
Did he send his children to private schools?
I don't really know.
No.
But I mean, if you're looking for a hypocrisy watch,
yes,
this isn't the place. We're trying to think of nice buildings that
now,
are modern.
Where were we going? Where were we now?
What he did?
Oh, the Sydney Opera House. When I went, courtesy of the Oldie, to Australia, I did look at the Sydney. I did look at some pictures of the peninsula where the Sydney Opera House was built, and it did look a lot nicer before the Sydney Opera House, I must admit. I saw some very early pictures of Australia before it was colonized.
What Richard Rogers did do is he himself lived in a very, very charming pair of early 19th century terraced houses in Chelsea. While building houses that didn't look like that.
I think
that.
we might have to say breathing problems quite.
Yes. One thing that we've noticed about modern buildings is that inexperienced people who have a lot of money suddenly often model their dwellings on hotels, as those are the buildings they're familiar with, you know, the big buildings. And this is just a lack of experience of being in classical big buildings.
I'm sure that's true. Whereas actually in the past, someone like Mr. Frick, who built Carnegie, who built the Frick Museum in New York, was completely obsessed with the past and with history. And he knew his pictures and his ancient architecture, so he could recreate it well. But, and we're moving on to the next topic.
John Soane as well.
Johnstone Museum,
yes.
Exactly, yeah, exactly. He knew his stuff. So moving on to the next topic. Thanks to COVID, most of us are now going to be passing our holidays at home rather than abroad. Do you approve of this? Are domestic holidays more enjoyable than foreign ones? What do you think, Giles?
I've been suffering from not being able to go abroad. Although all our friends seem to go abroad all the time, Mary. Mm. They seem to be going to Lamu and they seem to go skiing. It's just that you haven't organised our lives very well. We seem to be permanently stuck in Wiltshire in a state of paralysis about going abroad. It's because I don't like taking tests where they shove things up my nose. And so we tried some holidays in the British Isles, but they were a pale reminder of what a real holiday is, which is to go to the Mediterranean, the warm south, the Italian Riviera. It's the difference in the food, the climate, the change of habit, the passeggiata, looking at beautiful Italian girls in Roman sandals.
Okay, Harvey.
Walking past, one can look, Mary. You can look. There's no monopoly on beauty.
Same here.
Beauty appeals to old and young alike.
All right, that's my
of course,
turn.
It's not quite the same in England. We went to Cornwall and tried to recreate a foreign holiday, but then some terrible mist, sea fog came in, and it was there for 3 days. We weren't able to see the magnificent views which were promised in the guidebook.
Yes, but can I say that I think it's important to go abroad in the same way as it's important to leave your house and go to work in an office. It just gives you a break from yourself, you know, which is very relaxing to have another persona when you go to the office. And also when you go abroad, you get a break from yourself and your worries.
But you don't get another persona
an
if you go on holiday.
Euro humour and try out your Italian. Because the Italians are very forgiving, unlike the French. If you try and speak Italian, they're very forgiving, unlike the French. And they really appreciate you making an effort to try and speak their language.
And Giles often has catchphrases that he uses in Italy, like Vedi Napoli, poi mori.
Yes.
Even when inappropriate,
well,
he says.
Well, I try to do cliches in a foreign language.
Can you translate that one, please?
To always translate. Not all my jokes land.
Can you translate that last one? The Napoli line. Can you translate it?
It's a very complicated story, the Napoli line.
What is it?
Well, see Naples, then die.
Oh, yes.
Of course.
Don't
you know
that, Harry? See Naples,
now I
then
only
die.
English. I'm not as sophisticated as Giles. And let's move on to the last topic this weekend. It's Christmas.
Or maybe not quite so old.
That may be because I didn't go to university.
Well, your Italian is better than mine. So if we can move on.
Does Harry know that we're getting tempura rubato?
Christmas next weekend. Is this a source of unalloyed joy in your house? Or what is your Christmas routine?
Well, I'll start first, Mary, and then, because I know you tend to go on and you're unable to control your thoughts. But I'll just get over the basics of this, which is that I think before any prospective couple marry, they should discuss their various Christmas traditions and how they and their respective families celebrate Christmas. Do they have it, the Christmas lunch or meal at lunchtime or in the evening? Do they go for a walk before lunch or after lunch? Do they have stockings? Do they have pillowcases? And do they serve smoked salmon and champagne at breakfast time? These are all things that should be thrashed through along with a prenup before getting married, because they can be a great source of distress when you get marry someone in haste and then discuss Christmas at leisure and discover that you're completely incompatible when you have these ingrained habits of a lifetime's traditions. That's all I've got to say.
So, yes, I don't particularly want smoked salmon and champagne at breakfast time. And also, the woods have much more Spartan presence than the Killens. The Killens have luxurious presence. And Giles often complains if he gets too many presents rather than being pleased. But what we do love Christmas generally, because there's something in the air and people are in better moods, we find. And yeah, it's nice.
Well, it depends. Some of them aren't, Mary, if they have a liver condition. No, but if they're feeling liverish and they've eaten and drunk too much, it can bring out the worst in people.
Yeah, but normally in the run-up to Christmas, you're
yes,
all right.
Yes, but the actual day of Christmas, some of the worst family, this is why it's called crisis at Christmas.
But not he, doesn't
you
affect
can have
us.
Some of the worst family. Well, it doesn't now you stop drinking. But in the days when you used to imbibe.
Nutty, why are you pretending that? As you know, I haven't really drunk anything for about 40 years. However, we normally go to stay with friends in Worcestershire, and it's all just such fun that we have come to associate Christmas with pleasure ourselves.
Yes, well... Yes, it's all got, everyone's got to pull their weight there, haven't they? Some harder for some people than others.
So what we normally do before we go to Worcestershire is we open Christmas presents in bed with our dog. And that's my favourite part, I think. Then we pack up
the
car.
Is there a cut-off point before we get to a certain age where you stop having stockings?
Never.
And the presents go to landfill?
Never, not. We don't have landfill presents. No. I always get him things that he would genuinely want and need, so he doesn't complain. And so you really haven't had any scope to complain in recent years, but I have, because you've bought me things I didn't want, but you did, like books on Edward Lear.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Mary does tend to cry and get emotional at Christmas if she doesn't get nice enough presents.
I only did that once.
What was the present then?
Well, my father famously got 2 £5 notes and put them on a card and put them in the shape of a pair of trousers and gave them to my mother and said, buy yourself a pair of trousers. Now, I'm thinking of doing the same Christmas tradition with 2 £50 notes, Nutty, because men are not very good at buying their wives things, and that could give you the freedom to choose your own slacks.
No, I wouldn't want that. Thank you very much, though. I wouldn't mind the £250 notes. But I think that I'm just very happy that we're not dead and, you know, we're still having fun. And I do love Christmas.
Yeah, and you go to church, man.
Yes, we go to this
you
year.
You go to church.
Even you, Scrooge.
I tend to chop up kindling and keep the home fires burning.
So we've got Midnight Mass in our village at 11:30 this Christmas Eve. And lots of the fellow, fun lovers come, not just Christians. People come for the fun of it and the community spirit.
Pagans as well.
And the church is filled to the rafters with happy, gay, and drunk people.
But on an archaeological note, Harry, this was Stonehenge and Wiltshire were the place of midwinter feasting, where people were in the Neolithic times. They used to come from all over the British Isles to feast, and they brought their own animals and slaughtered them. And so we've grafted this midwinter feasting. We've grafted Christmas on top of that. But that only works if we get cold weather.
You can't say that pagan. No. Oh, you. Oh, I see.
Yes,
before
yes.
Christianity, that
keep,
happened.
Keep up, Mary.
Okay.
Well, that's a lovely place to stop. And I wish Giles and Mary a happy Neolithic Christmas. Happy Christmas.